Get ready. It's time to tee it up with Keith Jones.
Coming up on today's show, we welcome John Steinbreeder, renowned author and writer, as we get ready for Augusta next week. He knows more about Masters than just about anybody on the planet. So stay tuned and get ready as you tee it up with Keith Jones. Welcome to the show. So glad you'd be along. This hour, we wanted to talk a little Masters pregame because, you know, it's coming up next week. The ladies are playing at Augusta this week, but next week is the other tournament. It's known as the Masters. So, we have a lot of people that say they've been involved with the Masters, but a guy who has definitely been involved with the Masters is our guest this hour, our go-to guy, John Steinbreeder. Stein, it's always a pleasure to have you on the show. Appreciate it. You're a busy man. You're always going around. You're writing stories. You're still working for that Nuge guy, Global Golf Post, you know. So I guess the paychecks are still clearing, so that's good.
No, all's good. It's great to chat with you, especially in Masters time. This is kind of our own tradition, and it's fun to talk about the tournament for those of us in the Northeast or up north. This is really the start of the season in a lot of ways, and it's been a good golf season. I think it's going to get even better. And I just love getting as many of the best players in the world together for the first time in a while and really looking forward to seeing that. So it should be fun.
Yeah, before we get there, let's talk about the other guy, who's his golf game. How is your golf game? Because I know you've been working on stuff and it was, you know, an interesting winter for you, et cetera.
It's good. You know, I've been playing a little bit. I was just down at the at this new course in South Carolina called Broomsedge that Kyle France designed with the help of the owner of this place. It's outside Camden, South Carolina. It's a wonderful golf course. It's, you know, kind of feels a little bit like Augusta in terms of the hills and the tall cathedral pines. And, you know, we're getting there. It's still a lot of rust on the game right now in this time of year. I've got some new Titleist GT. Two woods in my bag, driver, sort of the mini driver they call it. It's like a 13.5 degree three wood, which I'm hitting really well, and a four and a seven wood. So my woods are really dialed in, and I was actually hitting the ball pretty well. So game's off to a good start. I've had some good rounds sort of down in the southeast, and looking forward to getting warm enough and dry enough up here in the northeast to start playing in this part of the world. But it's all good, and it's always great to be back out on the golf course.
Yeah, that sounds great. Yeah, I got a chance to play a couple weeks ago, and I was, it's like, wow, okay, this is pretty good. And I actually sneak into a bay at a store whose name I won't mention, but they have these bays you can hit into. You get the video feedback, so I need that right now. So that's working a little bit for me, but it's been interesting, but you know, here it is upon us. You know, usually it's springtime, but and people say, oh, it's golf, but no, when Augusta National opens up and the Masters are upon us, that's when people say, okay, the golf season is on. So that's a special place, and there's probably no place on that property that you haven't been. I'm trying to think, for all the years that you've written and have been in attendance down there, you probably know every nook and cranny better than just about anybody.
Well, I know the nooks and crannies. The good news is, Keith, is I've never been someplace that I wasn't supposed to be, which is very, very key in my world. I'm pretty, very respectful of the place and the tournament. And, I've got to do some cool things that because of my work with Masters.com. I was up in the booth one time with Jim Nance and Nick Faldo, and that was incredible. I don't know that any journalists have been able to do that before, and that was really, really fun and really interesting as they were sort of prepping and rehearsing one day, and I love that. And one of the coolest things I ever did there was get in the I guess they call them leaderboards, but getting those, one of the leaderboards behind the one by the seventh green, and was with a couple of the volunteers in there as they were putting up scores, and being inside of that, there's kind of, you know, these two walls. You're standing in between there, and these guys work hard, and they're exposed to the weather, and they work hard in all sorts of weather. But that was an amazing perspective, an amazing thing to get to see there. I also remember during the COVID Masters in November 2020, when there was nobody on the property, and because it was football season, they set up an ESPN College Game Day booth was set up by the par three course. And I'm not a college football guy, so I can't tell you all the names, but Desmond Howard and Kirk was the other guy, I forget. And Lee Corso was kind of remote. And at any rate, got to hang out with those guys as they were broadcasting from the par three course on Saturday of the Masters. And that was a really cool experience. So, yeah, walking the fairways are amazing. Being under the tree behind the clubhouse, you know, going up to the range and checking that out, all incredible experiences. And I just love walking that golf course. But those things, those kind of off the beaten path types things you're getting to see and do, are really make that special. And the memories, you know, are just magnificent, thinking of all those different things I've been able to do.
Yeah, that's awesome. And there's been so many books written about Augusta National and the Masters over the years. It's astounding. You think that, hey, how are they going to come up with something fresh and new? I have a few people I have to meet. Do you have a meeting spot for me next week? I have to, when I'm down there, get together with Nicholas Callaway of Callaway Golf fame and some other people.
Sure.
Do you say, hey, my best spot is...
I always meet people by the Bobby Jones statue right outside the members pro shop. It's right across from the members first tee. It's easy to find. It's never crowded, really, and easy to find people there, and it's a pretty cool place to be.
Okay, thank you for that. I just never asked you that before. I was like, you get there and you go through. You always get this. At least I do. You've been down there way longer than me, years wise. But you walk through the gates and you kind of start to get this little feeling coming over you, and then you finally get in through security, and then it's a game changer that way. But it's just so this beautiful piece of property. That it's just, I mean, you know how those guys do when it comes to that golf course and that whole facility. It's you know, unlike any other.
Well, nobody does it better, and I understand from different sources that the they had a good hard winter in Way, so that means the azaleas will probably be out. The timing for them ought to be perfect, and the course is in great condition. And I'm told that aside from some missing trees, obviously from the terrible storm that went through there in the fall, that, you know, it's as beautiful and as wonderful as ever. And it should be playing particularly well as everybody gets sets to go.
Absolutely. So for people who've never been there, so kind of lay it out for them, because there's the par three course and there's the big boy course. So how's that laid out, and then how do people get around? Say somebody's going for the first time. What tips do you give them?
Well, first of all, everybody who's been there, who's going there for the first time, they all said they just can't believe the changes in elevation, the hills. It's the thing that's one of the most striking parts of the golf course, and it's really fun. It makes it so unique. It's just a thing that astounds you if you've never seen it before. I love to walk the course, and I like to walk it in the, before people get out and about. I mean, on the weekends, on Saturdays and Sundays, it's so much fun to go out there in the morning before play. Anybody's really out playing, and just walk the course. I've sometimes told friends of mine, walk it backwards, start at 18 and walk it backwards. That's really cool. I mean, Jim Nantz sort of popularized this on Wednesday afternoon with the par three contest is going on. And the par three contest, with all those people hanging out in this on the newly designed par three course, and you've got, you got big concession facilities over there right now, and it's just one big sort of picnic. It seems like it's really, really cool. But while that's going on, and that could be fun, but, you know, it's bustling. And if you want a little privacy and a little quiet, what some friends and I have done, and it, modeling off what Jim Nance used to do, is go, and still does, I think, is take a walk down an Amen Corner and take a walk down there, because there's very few people, if anybody, on the golf course. And you can go down there, and it's just quiet. You can get a beer if you want at the concession stand right by 12 and 13, and just have a nice stroll down there and a nice hang in one of the most beautiful parts of the golf world you can imagine. That's something I really recommend doing. And the other thing that's fun is the practice facility and sitting there and just watching these guys hit balls. So you can sit. They've got really good seating. Makes you pretty close to the action. It's fun to see the players and the caddies and the different people out there, and to watch these guys hit balls and to listen to how crisply they hit all the balls and look at how good their swings are. And if you're a lover of the golf swing, if you love watching the best in the world swing the club, that's a really fun place to go hang out for a little while too. And I guess the last thing I would mention is right off of the first fairway, kind of as you walk into one of the main gates, and you'll come down and you'll go by the practice facility, and then you'll take a right, and there's the merchandise center, and down there's a really nice concession facility. And my wife and I were there last year over the weekend on Saturday and Sunday, and she was down for that, and we just sat out there one morning at around 7:30 and had a breakfast sandwich and a cup of coffee and just kind of hung out there, and it was really pleasant. I mean, it's a great place to hang out, and there's so many good places, but those are three or four ideas or thoughts, both walking and just hanging out, that I'd really recommend.
The breakfast sandwich and coffee, that was on my list for this year. I hadn't done that usually. I'm smart enough to stagger when I have lunch, so you're not there with that. But it's phenomenal the way these lines that occur, that form at Augusta National, go away rapidly. I mean, the food lines, you're like, oh, look at all the people. But then it gets in there and it splits, and then they go and get their stuff, and they're up, and they're paying, and they're out. And it's just it's so fluid. It's just astounding to watch the whole process.
Nobody does it better. I've never seen better crowd control, better crowd management. You know, there's a thing there, and I learned from writing for Masters.com. This whole idea of constant, continuous improvement that goes back to Bobby Jones and Clifford Roberts continues to this day, and everybody is obsessed with every year doing it better, and they pay attention to all these details. As you know, down in there are many places on the golf course, the concession stands and whatnot, where they've got iPads where you can, you know, give them suggestions and give them feedback. They read all of those. They care about that. And you're right, whether it's the restrooms, whether it's the concession stands, the merchandise facility, I mean, it can look, like you say, just ominously crowded, and it moves so much more quickly. This ain't TSA. I mean, it really moves beautifully, and it's pretty pretty remarkable how it affects that. Last year was the first year I'd ever been a spectator there. I'd covered 22 Masters. But I'd never been a spectator before, and it was so interesting seeing it from that perspective, because it was different, and I wasn't eating the meals in the media center. I wasn't, you know, you're out there on the course like everybody else who's there, and just seeing how it all operates, from the restrooms to the concessions to just the general ambiance and feel of the entire experience, and how well everybody is treated. It's a sight to behold.
Yeah, it really is. And that's why I wander out a lot. I don't spend much time in the media center at all. Just get out there, get on the course, enjoy the beauty, and then watch the people. I mean, it's great for people watching, because there's so many, but it's pretty crazy. But we're fortunate to have John Steinbreeder on with us this hour. We are preparing for Masters Week next week, and we'll talk about the course, talk about some of the players. We're going to talk about just about anything we want. We'll be back.
Hi, this is John O'Hurley reminding you you're listening to Tee It Up with Keith Jones. I haven't been this excited since I discovered I couldn't lick my elbow.
Back with John Steinbreeder. He is a renowned author. So John Feinstein died fairly recently. and he had like 43 books. Stein, I know you're maybe second place. I think close to that number. But how many books are you currently at?
Because you're working 20, on three. 26. Number 26 is coming out this summer. It's the Centennial History of Westchester Country Club, one of the great classic golf clubs in America. And I'm very proud of that and excited to see that book. I just was going over proofs earlier today. It looks really good, and it should be a lot of fun when that comes out.
So what is it about the writer? Now, the golf writer is going the way of the dinosaur, right? We know this is happening. You got fortunate, and Jim Nugent was smart enough to go to a digital platform, and Global Golf Post is leading the pack. That way you still get some great information and things like that. But the golf writer has definitely morphed over time, but by necessity. So when you get a chance to write books, how special do you feel about that? Because that, up until the pandemic, that had changed not for the better. And then people started reading books again, so books kind of got reinvigorated.
I mean, I just love to write. I love to write so much. And I love the work I do for the Post. I love that I'm able to do a variety of things, whether it's travel features, whether it's course architecture and design features, whether it is personality pieces. I'm doing a book. I mean, you're talking about a book, excuse me, doing a story about the book. You were just talking about Nicholas Callaway, and I've spent a bunch of time with Nicholas, and I'm writing a piece about him and the book on Ely that he has helped shepherd out and get out, which is really great and interesting and as interesting and fascinating as Ely was. And I got to spend a fair amount of time with Ely back in between 1999 and 2001 when he passed, and was one of the most interesting, fun, impressive people I'd ever met in any line of journalism. Nicholas is very interested in his own right and a lot of fun getting to know him. So, you know, pieces like that make it really fun. And the books are great because I love history. I love architecture. I love, writing about, the championships that have been held at certain places and getting a feel for the ethos of a club or a community. So it's a different style of writing, and books are obviously a lot bigger, and you've got to manage your time and your efforts on it in a lot different ways than you do with an article. But I love doing them. I just love doing any writing I can do about golf. Makes me very, very happy.
Would you consider yourself a historian of the game?
A little bit of one. I don't know if I'm as good as a Bill Fields or somebody like that, but I consider, I've learned a lot about the game writing about it for the last 25 years, and I enjoy it. I because of these books I'm doing and because I do so many different things, I'm not just covering tournaments. I think of my understanding and appreciation and knowledge of the game has grown a lot. And what's really cool about it is I learn stuff all the time. I mean, I know a lot about course architecture, but I don't know very much at all in reality. And it's fun to keep learning that. I keep learning about new places through my travel, new stories and new people through my work in different ways. And, it's constantly expanding, which I really, really like. So I consider myself a bit of a historian, and I love the history of the game, and I love the connections of the game. I was talking, it's a little bit of a long anecdote, but I was talking with somebody at my home club one time, Country Club of Fairfield in Connecticut. It used to be my home club. I'm no longer a member there. But it's a Seth Rayner design, and I was trying to explain to this person that it has a connection to St. Andrews. And they're like, well, what do you mean? And I'm like, well, go back to St. Andrews. The first true golf professional was a St. Andrew named Alan Robertson. And Alan Robertson made clubs, made golf balls, was the best player of his era, was a caddy, was a course designer. And he hired this 14-year-old kid to be his apprentice, and his name was Tom Morris. And turned out to be old Tom Morris eventually. And again, just great, epic figure in the game of golf. And there was a guy, a Canadian guy, who went to the University of St. Andrews and really fell in love with the game over there, and he got a locker in Old Tom's shop and played golf with Old Tom and listened to him, and his name was Charles Blair McDonald, the great architect. And when McDonald built the National Golf Links in 1911 to show America what traditional links golf was all about, he hired a surveyor out in Southampton to help him do it named Seth Rayner. So there you go. So I have this connection with the club that I played all my golf in as a younger man and really loved, going all the way back to the first golf professional in the game.
Fascinating. With John Steinbreeder, we'll be back.
The Dalai Lama. So I'm on a first tee. What am I giving the driver? He hauls off and whacks one. Big hitter.
The Lama.
Long. Into a 10,000-foot crevice right at the base of this glacier. You know what the Lama says? Gunga Galunga. Gunga, Gunga Galunga.
And we are back to start the second half hour of the show, spending it with a longtime friend, a guy who is just a phenomenal writer. So many books about all kinds of sports and golf is in there, of course, and writes for Global Golf Post. The guy has traveled the world. Fascinating. One of these days, I'm going to write a book on the Steinbreeder. That's what I'm going to call it, the Steinbreeder. Because the stuff you have seen, the places you have been, the people you have tipped a pint with, et cetera, you know, some stories. It's like this Ely Callaway book, which I'm enthralled with. I really give Nicholas Callaway a ton of credit for completing the book, because his father started. I think his father would be proud of him. And it's interesting because I know you've been around long enough to have had conversations with the Mr. Callaway as well. And I reflect back when I had him on the show, or even when we sat down and just chatted in general, and the impact that he still had. And he's one of those lost figures, you know, that just, I mean, he's been gone now more than two decades, and he's one of those impactful golf figures that you hope doesn't, you know, go away all the way. And I think Nicholas is trying to bring that around full circle, but coming out with this book. So it's a big deal. But the weirdest thing on that was I was watching the presentation at the PGA Merchandise show, and then Mr. Callaway began to talk. And I said, well, I had more color in my face than Nugent did. You know, he was up on stage with Annika. Those two, I think they went pale. But it was really, I said, this must be a voice actor. Well, you know, there's AI involved. It's all kinds of freakiness. But, of course, leave it to the late, great Ely Callaway to be on the technology front again for an AI-based audiobook. Just fascinating stuff to me, but.
And for Ely to be commanding an audience at the PGA show again, I was telling Nicholas that I was only at three PGA shows when Ely was there, 99, 2000, and 2001. But they were, I mean, the last one in 2001, they just introduced the new golf ball. And the ones before, I mean, they were, you know, he was just holding court and Callaway was crushing it. And it was just amazing, his presence there, and he had time. I see to always have time for journalists he respected, and he was just a great presence at that show, like Barney Adams was, like Wally always was, Wally Uline from Acushnet. And, you know, the show's kind of missing that a little bit, I think. It still works for me. It's still great, but you kind of had these icons that were there, Ely, you know, chief among them, holding court and telling stories and advancing the game in his ways. And what's fun about this, too, is it reminds us of what a presence he had in the game of golf, this book, but a reminder, too, of what an amazing life he had, both as, you know, a president of a Fortune 500 company in Burlington Industries, as a winemaker who, it's mentioned in the book, and I write about it in my story, who made a Chardonnay that was so good that Queen Elizabeth had seconds, asked for a second glass. And then you have this hickory shafted, you know, kind of wedge that he bought and turned into you know, Callaway Golf. And I mean, for me, I'm 68 years old now, but hitting that Big Bertha for the first time, that was the first time in my life I remember hitting a golf club that was demonstrably better than the previous generation of clubs. And to see people get really, really excited about a piece of equipment, the Pro V1 came along a little bit later, and that was the second time in my life where I just saw that unbelievable advance in equipment and the golfer's reaction to it. And you're right, that AI generated voice it cracked me up hearing it. A little spooky. I loved his voice. I loved the way he talked. I wrote a piece for Golf Week when I was writing for Golf Week when Ely died, which I've shared with Nicholas, and I hadn't read in a long time. And I read it as I got ready to write this story, and this is back in summer of 2001. And I just relished reading the piece because it reminded me of just what a cool guy he was. And Barney Adams had a great line, and I'm trying to think of it exactly here. And it was something to the extent of that, and Barney was at the time, and he just said, you know, when it came to equipment sales and golf, Ely Callaway played the music, and the rest of us danced to it. And, you know,
yeah, Barney's still around. I love Barney, and we've had some great conversations on this show and off the air, which is always can be colorful as well. But those are the guys, the innovators and stuff. And you're right about that. The not only were they icons, but you don't have that type of level of person in the industry anymore. Not that they need to be; they just happened to be. That happened, right? I mean, Barney told me numerous times.
So, yeah, that personality. I mean, they just had so much personality to them, and not that Chip Brewer doesn't or Dave Marv of Acushnet doesn't. I mean, you know, they're great guys, and I consider them good friends. But there was something about Wally, Ely, and Barney, just to name three people right there, that just were larger than life figures that had that vision, that personality, that nerve to take risks. That it was just always fun to be around those guys, and I miss them every time I'm at the show. I miss those guys to death. It was great having them around there, and I'm enjoying this book too. And I'm having really good time getting to know Nicholas because I'd never met him before, and he's been great.
Yeah, he's coming on the show next week, which is the official launch of the book. So we've had a couple conversations lining it up and stuff, and it's interesting talking with him. You talk with him for a little bit length of time, there's some layers there. You're saying, but you know, it's because it's from his standpoint, and his brother passed back in 2023, I believe. Was in the race cars and such. So it's just kind of always a tinkering kind of family. But, when you're the son or daughter of a legend, it can be really tough. And when you're, somebody under the shadow of somebody like Ely Callaway, that could really be touch and go at times, you know?
Well, and think of what Nicholas has done. I mean, one of the things that's sort of funny is he kind of acted as the agent for Ely when they got that advance, got like a $750,000 advance for the Callaway book back, I think it was the mid-90s. And but Nicholas had his own publishing company, but he just published Madonna's coffee table book on sex. And so he did not want to get involved with Ely's book. He helped him with get in the advance. And one of his latest creations has been sort of the definitive magnus opus of Bob Dylan. And he's got this unbelievable 1,000-page or 600-some-odd-page book on Dylan that came out not too long ago and is sort of, is preceded this book on Callaway. So, I mean, Nicholas has done some amazing. He did a book with Georgia O'Keeffe. I mean, he's a real Renaissance man. He's done some fascinating things in there. And I mean, I think his Dylan book is the definitive book on Dylan, and with the cooperation of his people and of him. So he's a very accomplished guy in his own right, and a very interesting guy. And you know, different than Ely, but also very similar in ways because of that.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. So that's really looking forward to that. Again, the launch of the book is officially next week. So that and the audio book. So it's like, wow. But talking to John Steinbruder on Teed Up with Keith Jones, and the Masters is upon us next week, and it's a big deal because this would be the 50th anniversary, or is the 50th anniversary, let me phrase it that way, of Lee Elder's first time playing in the Masters at Augusta. Lee left us, unfortunately, a couple of years ago, and he's dearly missed by yours truly, as well as other people on this staff. But the impact that he had and such. And it was interesting because I think Augusta National wanted to wait till this year to celebrate that. But because Lee had fallen a little ill and stuff, they made sure. So you talked about the COVID year when they set up the college football thing and everything. So I'm at the celebration of Lee Elder's first Masters appearance a few years ago. And this is in 21 when nobody was allowed out there. So it was the surrealist it would ever be. It was not my first trip to Augusta National. So I'd been there when there were a lot of fans and everybody else, but it was just the players and a smeckling of people, the invitees that got to. So I feel super honored to have had that opportunity, but it was a totally surreal experience and feeling the whole week being there and experience that course that was different than any other time.
Yeah, it was even more, it was even emptier in 2020. I mean, nobody was there. It was literally like watching a Walker Cup event. It was astounding. And then, of course, in 2020, and they had to delay Lee being the honorary starter for that one year, which was, you know, we were all bummed about that because we wanted to make sure, we knew his health was failing, and we wanted to make sure that he got to do that. And fortunately, he did in 2021, and they had allowed more people back. It took place in April, you know, as scheduled. And that was, I remember seeing you there. That was a very moving moment. And I was kind of on the Lee Elder beat that week for Masters.com, and I was down when he got the honorary degree down at Payne College and was with him a bunch during that. He must have been exhausted. I mean, that was a busy time for him, but it was a really, really cool time. And that press conference with Jack and Gary and Lee Elder after the honorary starters that Thursday of 2021 Masters was epic, to hear those three talk and to recognize and realize the close relations the three of them had was pretty cool.
Yeah, especially with Gary. I mean, Gary being from South Africa, he brought Lee, and Lee told that story numerous times on this show, of how Lee was invited to come to South Africa with Gary Player, on behalf of Gary Player, and the relationship that they had formed at that point. And all that stuff is just fascinating to me. And to be that close, you know, a few degrees of separation, it's just, you forget sometimes how fortunate you can be in this life, being around certain people that way. But just tremendous human beings. And I'm going to wear my 1975 hat that I got back in 2021 that Mr. Steph Curry had to design through his label. So, you know, he's got his own, his line, his clothing line now, you know. So, but anyway, if you see me walking around, that's me. Okay, there you go. So that's, you know, picking out my outfits already for next week from that standpoint. But it's just, this has been just a fantastic sport. And I had no idea many, many, many years ago, decades ago, really, when I first started doing this show, that it would turn into what it's turned into, and the people that I would meet and the friendships that I would make, like this hour's guest, John Steinbruder, top quality guy. You're very fortunate sometimes. You know, as a matter of fact, I distinctly remember being at Chelsea Piers and I think Srixon club launch, and I'm sitting there next to this guy, and we strike up a conversation, and we're still talking. So there you go. And Steinbruder, who you don't get the credit you deserve. You're not looking for credit, but you have really been at the forefront of golf writing, because not only are you very well versed in a number of areas, your depth is second to none. You know, so you stay in your lanes, which is many, but you probably have about 5 of the 8 lanes on the freeway that are yours. But you're
nice to say that, and I just love the variety I get in terms of the things I'm able to cover. I'd be very bored just doing one aspect of it. So I like that I write about business. I write about architecture. I write about travel. I write about equipment. I write about people. And it's really the people and the places I love to write about most of all, because I find them so interesting. And I can't tell you how many people, and Herb Kohler told me this, and Mike Davis has told me this, and I just have heard it from so many people who will say the best friends in the world they have and they've made have come from the game of golf. And, you know, and Herb talked about this with an incredibly rich and varied life that he led, and coming into golf later in his life with, you know, what he built in Kohler, and then, of course, in St. Andrews. And I hear people say that all the time, and I feel it the same way, too. And what surprises me about golf is, again, at 68, I'll be 69 in June. I can't believe the friends I continue to make in the game of golf. It's wild. I can't think of any other aspect of your work, of your life, where you would make friends as easily and as continuously as you can in the game of golf, because you're constantly being exposed to new people. And when you meet these people, you've got this bond, this common interest in the game. And it's amazing. I can't believe how many good people I meet in it on a weekly, almost, certainly a monthly basis. I keep making friends. He's like a big teddy bear.
That's what it is. No, but I'm glad you mentioned that. It brought that friend thing up, because I say that on this show, and people are saying, "Oh, he's like friends with everybody, friends, whatever." But I'm telling you, this is what I don't say. Somebody's my friend if they're not. Now, if he needed a ride somewhere, it'd be a little drive to get to Connecticut for me. But you know, if he broke down the side of the road, I would come and get him, pick him up. You know, that's the kind of friendship that has evolved over there. I'd rather be on a golf course with him. But he's a long hitter, and he's great. His game is like A+, and it's, you know, it's difficult to be on the same tee box with him, because he's just, you know, you just want to crawl back into your shell. But that aside, you know, Stein's a quality person, so I'll just leave it at that.
You're nice to say that. I feel the same way about you. And again, you know, like you said, when you go down in the gust, it's like the PGA show. You just spend half your time walking around and saying hello to people.
Yeah, true.
Because,
yeah,
you know, it's just the way it is.
Well, that and it's like, what are you doing here? I don't know. What are you doing here? You know, it's like one of those things. But we got one more segment with Stein. We're going to talk about a little golf course architecture, just because I'm enthralled with it. I couldn't design a course, I don't think, but I'll leave that to Stein to do whatever. But we'll talk about Chris Wozinski and some of these great guys that are coming up and making a name for themselves as well. And we'll do that with the great writer himself, John Steinbruder, after this break.
Hi, this is Bob Toski, and you're listening to Tee It Up with Keith Jones. And we'll be right back.
Back for a final segment. As I mentioned before we went to the break, it is Stein's time to step to the microphone. So you touched on a number of topics, which I always love, because that's kind of how I do this show. It's like I want to talk about with a great golf course architect, whether he's up and coming, or if he's a Rhys Jones, like a legend, you know, those type of things. You're able to do it. I'm able to do it on this show. And all the areas, equipment and everything else, no exception on that. But I'm always enamored with golf course architecture. And maybe it goes back to talking with Pete Dye, or more succinctly, Alice Dye on this show, and just being fascinated by letting them talk. It's like you're sitting around a campfire. You're sitting by the wood stove with your grandpa or something like that, by the roaring fire, and they're telling you the way they came up with these golf courses. And you're just astounded, thinking, I don't think I could do that.
Well, you know, I know what I like, and I know what looks pretty good, and I just can't believe, though, the creation, the looking at a piece of land, and some land's obvious. I mean, I've been out in the Sand Hills a bunch in Nebraska, and you can drive around and see golf holes all over the place in those dunes out there, and I've seen some spots in, you know, in the British Isles or in Ireland, just looking at, you know, coastal areas with all their dunes as well, and certain places are really obviously good sites for golf, but there's so many places that I just can't imagine the vision that it takes to create something out of, you know, the woods of Pine Valley, for example, or, you know, something like that, and how somebody had the vision and the ability to do that. And that's what fascinates me. And also just the little nooks and crannies in the way that, you know, they will find and use the subtlest bumps and humps and figure out ways to incorporate different features in their designs. I spent a lot of time in December with Tom Fazio II, who is Tom Fazio's nephew, and Mike Davis at their Apogee, at their South Course at Apogee, talking to him about that design. And it was so interesting walking and playing that course, speaking with them about it, looking at the different features and understanding how they did stuff and how they set stuff up. For example, there are multiple tees there, four or five sets of tees, but the tees that the average, you know, member golfer, the average recreational golfer we're going to use are the tees that are right across from most of where the greens are, because they figured those are the tees that are going to get the most play, so they kind of make it easier for those folks. And if you play the back tees and the more forward tees, you get a little bit more of a walk. I mean, that was done intentionally. Just little things like that, you know, finding and making sure there's always a way to get up onto the green with a run-up shot or something like that. Incorporating water in ways that it's there visually, but not in a way that it's you know, eating up golf balls all the time. I mean, I just find it fascinating watching these folks and listening to them. And I love seeing their courses when they're being built, as I did the South Course in February of 2024, and then playing it in December 2024 and seeing the finished product. And that transformation is just amazing to me. It's really cool.
Yeah, so you get to play all these wonderful things, and that's, you know. So you're doing more, less travel specifically, but more golf course analysis, blending, what?
Yeah, kind of both. You know, they go hand in hand. I'm not traveling as much as I was, but still doing, you know, several, you know, I'd say, you know, four or five major travel features a year, and maybe four or five, you know, pretty big golf course architecture pieces. I'm going to do one on Broome's Edge, which I just played down in South Carolina. I'm going to do one on the upper course at Baltusrol, which Gil Hanson and Jim Wagner just redid, and also play the lower course, which I played a few years ago when they completed that, and see how that's grown in and how that's sorted itself out. I'll be out in the Sand Hills again to see one more time. I've done a four-part series on the David McClay Kidd course out of Graybull, which is part of the Dormy Network out in Sand Hills. So I'll go out there this summer and check that out, which is I can't wait, because I played it last September with David. It was awesome, and I just love that part of the world and the golf out there. And in a couple of weeks, right after the Masters, I'm going up to Chattanooga to play the new Keep course at the Macklemore Resort up there. That's what I want to do, is just tell the story about how it came to be, what it was like, what the course is like. I find that really fun.
There he goes. That's why he is the man. Although I never thought I'd hear Chattanooga and resort in the same sentence. But we're just out of time. Thanks to our buddy John Steinbreeder. Get out there and practice your game. Practice, practice. Take your game to the next level, and we will talk to you next week. Take care.